some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
Oh, 8:17 on the Wake Up Zone on 104.5 The Zone. Mark Howard, Blaine Bishop, Kevin Hoff, our producer, Jonathan Schaefer. He's one of our football daddies, that's for sure. We love having him in every Monday. And that is Coach Dave McGinnis, of course, Titans radio analyst. Good morning.
Yeah, what's up, guys? Good morning. Hey, I really like listening to the number segment when I'm driving in. And again, I've been with this organization for 11 years now. I've been here, so I've been with most of these guys. And, I mean, you guys are spot on with them. You're two tackles. I mean, Roos and Bruce, yeah. Come on, man.
Yeah, Bruce, yeah.
I mean, that you guys are spot on with what you're doing. That's a really good off-season segment, it really is.
But think about this. I know this is not part of the segment, though, but okay. Derek Morgan, and you've coached, you know.
I was here when we drafted him.
When you drafted him, as well as with Vandenbosch. He is third all time. I would have never guessed this. You know, 44 and a half sacks in a Titans uniform. And Vandenbosch only has 38 in a Titans uniform. He has 58 in his career.
Right.
But 38 with the Titans, which was his best. But man, to think that he was third best behind Casey and Javon Kearse, it's a little surprising. Give us your backdrop on Derek Morgan and watching him develop as a player and then switching to the 3-4. Dropping the linebacker, I didn't think he could do that because, you know, he got the big trunk, and that just doesn't tell me that he could drop and do it. He did a solid job under LeBeau and crew doing that. So how did you summarize Derek Morgan's career here?
You know, I remember when we were vetting him, when we were drafting him, Jim Washburn was the defensive line coach, okay. and when he was at Georgia Tech, mm-hmm. and he was, you know, Wash said, this guy is a guy that the more that you watch him, he is just, and the adjective that you just used, Blaine, is solid. Everything that he does is solid, and he's one of those guys that was sneaky athletic. He was more athletic than you thought because, I mean, it wasn't like if you watch Javon Kearse, you play, or you watch a Simeon Rice that I had, I mean, those guys were so twitchy and so, you know, and move around so quick, or even Jarrell. Jarrell is so quick and so twitchy, you know, you can see it immediately. But Derek Morgan was a good athlete. He was an extremely smart guy. He was a very aware, alert player. He was a guy that really worked at his craft. He studied. He took care of his body. All of those particulars that go into being a professional football player, once you get into the building and once you get into the weekly and the daily grind of being a professional, he checked all of those boxes. And so it doesn't surprise me when you bring up that, but he was a productive player throughout his career.
I think he missed the first season. He only played like four games. He tore his ACL. I don't remember how many games he played, but he didn't play a lot. So, I mean, man, and then at the end there, he missed a lot of games.
He got dinged up a bunch early in his career, and you wonder if he's going to be one of those guys where you're going to say, okay, the injury-prone Derek Morgan. But to his credit, he became a model of durability later in his career, had his two best seasons under Dick LeBeau, and as you mentioned, Coach Mack, made that adjustment, from playing defensive end to rush linebacker, had 9 sacks in 16, 7.5 in 2017, which was a big boost for that defense.
Yeah, no, he was just a very diligent player. Mm. He took his craft very, very seriously. And those kind of guys, if you draft those guys and you get your locker room, you know, with a pretty good abundance of those types of players, that it's very, very important to them, and they do the correct things from Monday to Saturday to get ready for the game on Sunday, and they're able to do it during the off season. They're able to do it during the week. You know, Blaine, if you have teammates, you know the guys that are putting the work in. You know those guys. And so to me, I mean, I was always very impressed with his approach to the ball game. And that right there lent to his future durability and to his longevity of his career. But he had a good career.
Oh, no, he had a solid career, no doubt about it. I just think if you started thinking about ranking Titans,
well, I agree with
great
you.
Pass rushers, I just don't know if he third. I don't think you would have him third.
I agree.
We can go with Javon Curse, and then we can go down the list. And then until you look at the numbers, you go, wow. Well, dang, and if you look at his career, he's like for the time that he played, because he was injured there in the beginning, then he was injured there at the end. I mean, this guy could have been over 55 sacks. Easy if he would have played like two seasons that he only played partially.
As I say, when you really watched his game and you studied his game,
he had a motor too.
And it was the same. He had a good motor and was the same way at Georgia Tech. He was just very consistently, sneakily.
Just think how many
productive.
Almost sacks. Remember, he had hits on the quarterback. I remember one year I was like, dang, he hit the guy right when he threw it. I mean, man, that happened numerous times.
And a lot of that is he devoted himself to his craft. He studied his opponents. He understood his where he fit into the scheme. He understood who he was playing against. As I said, Derek, he was a pro.
Another guy, Michael Ruse, talk about a tough act to follow. Coming in, to sort of transition after Brad Hopkins the first year, Jeff played him at right tackle and kept Brad on the left side. And then, he moved in to left tackle. And such an interesting story. I mean, the kid was born in Russia, in Estonia, and not exactly a conventional upbringing for a pro football player. But I remember Munch, went out to Eastern Washington. Former Titan Tom Ackerman was on the staff.
Exactly right.
And, got a little bit of intel from him and watched Ruse. And, Ruse was not the logical first left tackle that was going to get drafted, but it turned out to be a pretty sage pick.
No, and I can remember those draft meetings. I can remember when we gathered up as a staff with those draft meetings because we were clearly in the market, for a left tackle or for another tackle. And so, and when Munch did go out there, and as you said, very, very well said, with Tom Ackerman being out there, but Munch was sold on his, Ruse's maturity right from the start. His maturity, he was a guy that you knew that Munch felt like was going to be extremely, extremely solid whenever you put him in there. And the thing about Michael Ruse was if you didn't ever approach it. Michael Ruse wouldn't say hardly anything.
I know.
He never said a word. He was just businesslike and he worked and he was a tough guy. When he and Big Country, Stewart was the right tackle.
Oh, yeah,
those were two physical dudes. Michael Ruse was a tough guy. Don't ever mistake his quiet nature for not being a tough and physical guy.
And remember, Jamal Brown was coming out that year from Oklahoma. He got taken with the 13th pick, and I think a lot of us were a little surprised that the Titans didn't go Brown in the first round. They went with Pac-Man Jones, which is a whole other conversation. But, Michael Ruse gets taken in the second round. We're like, who's this guy?
Well, and again, that was all Munch. It was all Munch because he went out there, he put all the work in on him, and I can remember Munch in those meetings reading those reports, on him, and Munch said, this is the guy. This is the guy. This guy will do it. And I think he was so sold on who he was as a person and plus his athletic ability. He was another guy, Blaine and Mark that we can talk about that athletically. He was a good athlete. Mm-hmm. He was a good athlete, and but he was so quiet, and just so businesslike. And even when you see it, I saw him in the grocery store the other day over in East Nashville, and he is, he just walks around and he's so comfortable in his own skin as who he is, and he was just like that as a player the whole time. That was an excellent, excellent pick. And as I said, I love the fact when you guys do this, it just brings up all these memories of these guys and how they got here. And as I said, I've been with the organization for 11 years now, so I remember the history of most of these guys.
Mm. All right. On the other side, we're going to talk to Coach Mac about, of course, Marcus Mariota gathering with the receivers in California and also if he's pro or con on the proposal of an 18-game season. 827 on the Wake Up Zone, but first, Blaine. giving Gary Ashton some love.
Hey, it's Blaine telling you about Tennessee's number one real estate team. That's Gary Ashton with RE/MAX Advantage. Everyone's going crazy over reverse search real estate. You say, what is that? It's a way of finding out all the buyers in Nashville looking for a home just like yours before you put it on the market. That's why they say don't sell without the intel. The technology works by leveraging the biggest database on Nashville real estate. You type in your address and how much you want to sell for, and boom, you can see all the buyers looking for your kind of home. Plus, your listings come up first on their site. That's the Ashton Advantage. So don't sell without the intel, and just give Gary Ashton team a call today at 615-301-1650, or you can visit them online at GaryAshton.com today. But if you call today, Gary will donate $50 to Vanderbilt Children's Hospital for every listen appointment he goes on. So hurry up and give him a call, 615-301-1650, or online at GaryAshton.com.
Little girl, what's your name?
8:33 on the Wake Up Zone on 104.5 The Zone. Mark Howard, along with Wayne Bishop, our producer Jonathan Schaefer, Kevin off this week. And we, of course, are with Coach Dave McGinnis, Titans radio analyst. And Coach Mac, Marcus Mariota is in California with a number of Titans receivers. They're going to work out together on a field somewhere in the L.A. area. But just, from a fan's point of view, what types of things does Marcus hope to accomplish with his pass catchers?
Well, guys, what they're doing is they're getting together, just to get into the flow of what's getting ready to go on. I mean, that's basically, what they're doing. It's more of a camaraderie thing to get together, to build some team unity, to build a unity. To me, and I've been on teams where guys have done this and gone on, and what's happening now. I mean, you can see during this year as to where the defensive linemen in the league are all getting together with a forum that they're having. You saw where the offensive linemen get together. I mean, it's time. You can feel it start to ramp up. I mean, you can feel it, start to ramp up there at the facility. I mean, everybody has got the itch now. I mean, now it's coming in. I mean, you're up there, and not only the players, but all the preparation that it takes for a season to get ready to start. I mean,
gave me chill bumps. I'm sorry. Get ready.
No, exactly. Look, John Albertson and his security people, Brent Akers and his ops people, okay, Hoss and Joey and Matt, all the people in the equipment room, Terry Porch with his field people, they've got a new dining hall up there, with Chris Parnell and those guys. Look, everybody is getting ready. That whole building is getting ready, and you can feel it. You can sense it. You can sense that everybody is starting to pull together, and this is part of it, with what Marcus and his receivers are doing, and players are doing this around the league, because the way the new CBA is now with that, with this 4.5 week split that you get after the last OTAs are over, after a while, you start to get the itch. I mean, look, I've had it. I've talked to you guys. I've already started to watch Cleveland. I mean, I watched the last 8 game of Cleveland just to see so I can do a better job on the broadcast, and so I can just, but you start to get the itch. I mean, I've been doing this my whole life, and about this time of year, you can just sense it in the air, and you can sense it coming. That's what Marcus and those guys are doing.
You feel like, at least on paper, this is the best receiving core that Marcus has had since becoming a Titan.
The whole paper thing to me. I mean, here's what I know. I know that they've got players put together that they think are going to give them an opportunity to be better than they were and to be more consistent. But we'll have to see. The whole paper thing to me, Mark, and I know you and Blaine agree with this, and I know our listeners agree with this too, because the educated fans know you do everything that you can in the off season to put together what you feel like is going to be the optimum group to work with to try to get done what you need to get done during the season. And so, yes, I mean, I think they've put together a nice group. Now they need to come together and they need to perform consistently.
Man.
Well, we have gone back and forth, of course, speculating on Marcus, of course, what kind of numbers he was going to put up. And,
it's a big year for Marcus.
It is. And I was saying maybe his magic number, is 20 touchdown passes, but it's also all about, don't want to put words in Blaine's mouth. It's all about the wins and losses. But I think he's set up for success. You know, better offensive line. He can do something that he had a hard time doing last year, and that is use the middle of the field between having Delanie back and between having a really good slot receiver in Adam Humphries. And I sort of feel like, you know, he is more comfortable, it seems like, you know, throwing in that area where he's had success before when Delanie was healthy and Rishard Matthews was here. And I just think they're playing to his strengths.
Well, look, I mean, look, this is the ultimate production business. You've only got 16 chances to get it done. And everybody, there's not one franchise in the National Football League that starts the season out trying to set their people up for non-success, okay? But it is up to the players, and it's up to the coaches, and it's up to the organization to put it out there the best that you can to be successful. But you have to produce consistently. Consistency in performance and consistency in production is what you're looking for. And that, to me, Mark, is what's so important. Look, Marcus knows it's an important year for him. I mean, everybody on that football team knows it's an important year for them, because the National Football League, the way that it's set up with the parity, the way that it's set up as far as if you're really good, you draft late, the way that it's set up with the salary cap, all of these things are set up so that everybody, once you get started, you know, and let's take injuries out of it for a minute because you can't predict that, but it's a competitive issue for 17 weeks in this league, and you've got to perform.
How tough or difficult or how easy will it be for Arthur Smith, now a play caller, to transition into that? And what has he done to prepare himself, besides his experience in the league, to prepare himself for what's about to happen? When we all know when the bullets start flying and everything else, how do you, you know, being a first time, how do you practice those things? And until you're in those situations, will you ever feel comfortable? Well, what can he do now, Arthur Smith, to help him feel comfortable in all the play calling and deal with Marcus and those things that he's good at?
Blaine, that's a great question. And it's a great question, you know, for our listeners to listen to this. I've been in that situation. Look, when you're getting ready and you always would like to think, once you start coaching, that I have a chance to advance, all right? And so if you're going to advance, you know, the natural state of progression is from a position coach then to a coordinator role. And he has already started doing that. And what you can do, you can do that during the off season. You can take games and you can put them on, and you can look at an opponent. You can look at their personnel. You can look at their down and distance, and then you can sit there and cold call a game. You can cold call a game. You can do that. All of the unscripted periods that they had during these OTAs, which Mike Vrabel gave him, which is extremely, extremely important as far as, and you were out there at some of those OTAs when Mike Vrabel would say, okay, let's go. Ball's here, first and 10. Bang, let's go. That's extremely, extremely important too. So he's going to call his offense. Dean Pease is going to call his defense. There's nothing scripted. There's a lot of things that you can do to prepare yourself. Now, once you get into the ball game, the biggest part of it, Blaine, it comes with, because you game plan during the week and you've got a set that you're looking at, and you're looking at everything subsetted, broken down from down and distance to personnel group, field position, all of those things. But the big thing that comes with experience with doing this, and what you have to learn, is how to adjust on the run.
How to
move and adjust on the run.
You got to have your people in place so that you can trust them telling you the information. Players to other coaches.
Exactly right. And that, to me, was the biggest thing. When I started calling defenses, you know, I had been in the league a while and had observed people do it, had put together game plans. But being able to adjust during a ball game, when things come up that you didn't plan for, or that you may have planned for, or that the opponent is doing something different than you thought, the quicker you can adjust and get back to center on those types of things, that's important.
When you were a coordinator, could you tell sometimes that you were in their offensive coordinator's head?
Absolutely. And I could tell they were in mine,
too.
That's
got to be a good feeling.
No. And I could tell they were in mine, too. Because and I'm just being honest. Right. Because there are times when, as a play caller, when you start chasing calls, and by that I mean as a defensive play caller, if I start trying to defend the last play with my next call, or I start worrying about, in other words, you're chasing calls. You know, it we call it being on your left foot.
Yeah.
If you're on your left foot and you're always, you know, you feel like, you know, you're just about a half bubble off a plum with everything that's coming, and your players know it too. And you, Blaine, you've been on many a sideline adjustments where finally, and I would get the guys together and say, look, here's what they're doing, okay? I was behind that series. I'll get you ahead on this series, and here's what we're going to do with that. We're going to go back to basics. We're going to quit chasing their calls, and we're going to start playing our base stuff to get settled down a little bit. A lot of that stuff comes with, you know, and at the same time, you can, when you're in a groove and you feel yourself, and you can feel. I mean, it's, you know, it's like playing poker when you know you're getting good cards before you ever turn it over, because you get a feel for it, you know, when it starts coming. So it works both ways.
All right, on the other side, we're going to ask Coach Mack who the best play caller he went up against, who was that, and we'll talk about the proposal of the 18-game season. 8:43 on the Wake Up Zone on 104.5 The Zone. Oh, 8:48 on the Wake Up Zone on 104.5 The Zone. Mark Howard along with Blaine Bishop, Kevin off this week. Our producer, Jonathan Schaefer, as always, making the magic from behind the glass. And we're still with Coach Dave McGinnis. He's talking football. You know, I asked him in the previous segment about getting into the head of the opposing offensive coordinator, and Coach Mack said it kind of cut both ways. Who was the best play caller that you ever matched wits with?
The guy that I really thought did a great job of setting up plays. And to me, that's a great offensive play caller. A guy that calls a play but is setting up. It's a guy, it's like playing chess. Mm-hmm. You play chess, you make one move, but you're setting up moves ahead.
Grandmaster over here can relate to that.
No, yeah, but I was a chess champion back in the day.
But that is but that's true story.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and the guy that I went against the most that I really respected, that you never knew what because of personnel groups and the way he would set it up, was Norv Turner. Norv did a great job of setting things up, okay, and just understanding. He first of all, to be a really good offensive play caller, you've got to have a real great grasp of your system, okay? Now, I wasn't the coordinator when we were playing Bill Walsh all those years at the 49ers, but he and his quarterback understood his system so well that if you were half a step off on defense, you were done. and where I really saw that was the week that we went to San Francisco in the preseason. I mean, but San Francisco and the Bears went to Berlin in the preseason, and we practiced against them every day before we played them in a preseason game just to listen to their install and see where they were. So, but I wasn't a coordinator going against him. But Norv Turner, in my mind, you know, what I went against, because the things that he did, he was so sound, but he did so many things from so many different ways. And the other guy, then we'll go on another subject, the other guy was Mike Shanahan.
Yeah, pretty good.
Oh, man. But going back to Norv Turner real quick, now he's with the Panthers with Cam Newton, and he's kind of evolved and changed. Do you see any similarities to some of the things
he's
evolved doing now?
And you have to evolve.
Totally different.
And what he's evolved a lot, and most of this spread open stuff, and we can dive deep into this if you want to. A lot of it comes from his son Scott, you know, because, you know, of the newer stuff with the open stuff and the horizontal spread stuff and those types of things. But what Norv has a really good analytical, systematic mind as far as offense. Because when you really start studying him, and look, you study play callers, you study their tendencies when you're getting ready for something, especially if you've been in the league a long time, as much as you do what their scheme is. You study their patterns too. In other words, the way they look at it, Norv has always had a very, very good ability to organize and to disguise what he's doing. He's a lot like what Dean Pease does defensively. He gets to it. A lot of it is the same as principle.
All right. The owners are proposing an 18-game schedule where players would only play in 16 games, you know, and obviously the revenue opportunities. But as someone who has managed a few of those 16-game seasons, What problems would that would that possibly appear if you're trying to manage a team through an 18 game schedule?
Well, I mean, look, 18 games, you know, would not be the issue. I think what the issue would be, and I mean, we want to look at what's going on with these talks. I think there's several things that they're going to come up with. But 18 games, if you have two preseason games and you have two open dates and you expand the roster, well, then 18 games is probably doable. But there's a lot of things that are going to go in before they go to 18 games. I mean, just some of the things that I've put down here with this, when you start – and I'm glad they're talking. As I said, I've actively been through two work stoppages, and it doesn't help anybody. You know, I was through the strike, I was through the lockout, and it just, you know, it makes it hard on everybody. But you start looking at revenue split. You know, that's going to be something they're going to talk about. They're going to talk about stadium credits, because that's something that's going to come into these things. Franchise tag and the fifth year option, that's going to be something they're going to talk about.
Service time and stuff like that. Yeah.
The 18 game season will be one of them. But then you talk about lifetime health care. You talk about change in the drug policy. You talk about the commissioner's power. You know, I mean, all of these things are going to be on the table. Player safety and then former player benefits. I mean, all of these things have come up.
Before 93 as well.
Yes. And so all of these things have come up. So you know, when they just. I think that the 18 game thing is something that was just pulled out and you know it is what was probably just a real quick bullet point. But there's a lot of things that need to be talked about. The thing that I like is that they're talking because nobody benefits from a work stoppage. You know, this is such a great league and a great thing. Everybody needs to benefit, and the more you talk, I think the more that you can get to a resolution.
But how, I'm talking about problems that would present themselves, and I was saying, okay, kicking game could be dramatically affected. Good luck trying to find that other punter, another place kicker.
You're talking about if you could only play 16 games?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think you'd – I mean, I don't have any idea how that would be. I mean
– then coaches then would be affected drastically on game planning. Just on that alone.
Yeah, as I said, you'd have to expand your roster. And then, I mean, I'm not sure that your kickers would be guys that you would sit. You know, I mean, it to me, I'm not sure that would ever be something. That might have been something that was just thrown out there to say, okay, how about if we do this? But look. Everything is great to talk about now. The key point being they're talking.
It is. It's good. But that concept, at least to me, is problematic. The shortage of backup quarterbacks. You know, the Titans, you know, are on the high end of the scale with Tannehill. But, you know, we've seen.
What are you talking about? Woodside?
Well, again, you never know.
Logan Woodside, what are you talking about?
It's possible. You know, suddenly, yeah, you got to carry three quarterbacks.
I would have a hard time thinking that this would ever be something that would be a sticking point. That they would say 18 games, but your players can only play 16.
Great as always, Coach Mac. We always enjoy your
guys.
Monday
look,
visits.
I enjoy driving in, getting you know, listening to you guys talk about the numbers, and then plus when we get here, talking ball. And as I said, you can feel it, guys. The season's here; it comes. You can sense it in the building. I love it. See you guys.
Yeah. All right, Coach Dave McGinnis. On the other side, Pro Football Focus rated the Titans' offensive line, but are you buying it? 8:56 on the Wake Up Zone on 104.5 The Zone.